And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cormery. An egg shortage has hit the nation, and Alaska is feeling it acutely. An outbreak of the avian flu in Washington state has drastically slowed egg shipments north. Many rural communities only have one or two grocery stores, so their options are even more limited. KDLG's Izzy Ross reports.
On a recent snowy afternoon, Michael Yingst scans the dairy section at the Dillingham AC grocery store.
I came here to look for eggs. Tomorrow is my birthday, and I was hoping to make some banana cream pie, but it looks like we're going to be out of luck for a while.
People across Alaska are running into egg shortages. Many are posting pictures of signs and empty shelves on social media. Even large grocery chains like Fred Meyer are limiting how many eggs people can buy. Rural areas are getting hit especially hard because many only have one or two grocery stores, which leaves them with fewer options. And the shortages aren't expected to let up anytime soon.
It's not good news in any way. It's really farm dependent.
Kyle Hill is the president of the Alaska Commercial Company, or AC, which has 35 stores in the state and calls itself the largest retailer in rural Alaska. It gets most of its eggs from Washington state, and one of those providers, Oakdale Farms, was recently hit by the avian flu.
They've had to, unfortunately, deal with over a million birds that have had avian flu in that farm. So there's huge supply issues in the sense that we're struggling to get any eggs at all.
When they can get eggs, it's just a trickle. Hill says AC is trying to let its suppliers know that rural communities don't have a lot of options when it comes to groceries. If AC doesn't have eggs, that means an entire community might not have eggs, and that's a food security issue. But Hill says it's tough because they're competing with large national chains.
They are trying to leverage their national scale and their national distribution to get eggs from elsewhere. But, you know, when it comes down to it, there's only so many eggs out there.
Hill says pressuring suppliers only goes so far. It's a supply and demand issue, and all retailers are pushing their suppliers.
It is a fight because every retailer is making their case to the same suppliers. And this isn't even just a Pacific Northwest issue. Down in Texas over the holidays, a friend said that they saw eggs at $9 a dozen because they have a farm down there that's having avian flu issues. So it's really farm dependent.
Those prices aren't going to be any cheaper in rural Alaska. And when supplies run low, costs go up. At the front of the store, Sarah Nanaluk waits for fellow shoppers. She and several others traveled about 30 miles over the tundra on snow machines from their hometown of Manicotick to Dillingham to go shopping.
We only have one small trading store, which is owned by Manicotick Native Limited. There's no other store.
Nanaluk says the price of eggs has skyrocketed.
So for Christmas, I had to buy two dozen for almost $20.
Another option is home-raised eggs. Alicia Swan peruses the dairy aisle, but not for eggs. That's because she and her family own chickens.
Out of 17 birds, we're averaging anywhere from 6 to 9 eggs a day. That's pretty good.
But it's not easy to keep chickens in rural Alaska, especially in the winter, when chickens tend to produce fewer eggs.
It can be complicated getting feed here, especially during the winter. You have to continually give them water because it freezes, keep them warm. So yeah, we give them extra light to keep them laying eggs. They kind of have a vacation during the winter.
Nice.
And what about Michael Yingst and his birthday banana cream pie? He's trying to come up with a new plan.
Researching egg substitutes and see if there's anything else I can use as a replacement for eggs, but they're kind of irreplaceable when it comes to a lot of things, so hopefully we'll figure that out.
Dillingham's other grocery store, Bigfoot, uses different suppliers and got a delivery of eggs today. Meanwhile, AC expects a shipment to stores throughout the state by the end of next week. But it anticipates the shortage will last for at least a couple months. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Yesterday was the day Mary Peltola was to be sworn in for a full term in Congress, but that didn't happen. All a majority could agree on was to adjourn and try again tomorrow. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin caught up with Peltola during the Day of Limbo at the Capitol.
Nothing can happen in a new term in the U.S. House until the members elect a speaker. Republicans have a slim majority, but 20 hard-right Republicans voted for someone other than frontrunner Kevin McCarthy, blocking him from the speaker's chair. Peltola took a seat in the back of the House chamber and, like all Democrats, just kept voting for Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York.
Peltola. Jeffries.
Peltola. Jeffries.
Pence. Peltola. Jeffries.
Jeffries didn't have a majority either. So, after three rounds of voting, the first day of the new Congress ended in a stalemate. Peltola says it's a sign of the times.
It shows how divided within a party we are as Americans, and that's a concern.
It's highly unusual. Peltola notes that it's been more than a century since a vote for speaker took more than one round.
This is historic because even 100 years ago, it went to two rounds and then they adjourned. And this, I believe, can go as many rounds as people can take.
She figures it'll eventually end when Republicans iron out their differences and elect a speaker. Peltola, in a black cusbuck and Yupik-style fur boots, was in demand in the Capitol hallways. A pair of Hakeem Jeffries staffers were delighted to bump into her. They pumped her hand and congratulated her repeatedly. They invited her to a reception room near the chamber where she could fuel up with mini quiches and other finger food. Yes, they said, by all means, bring your five kids. The kids! They'd come to Washington to watch their mom be sworn in. Instead, they were waiting in Peltola's office, two of them in Coast Guard uniforms.
I haven't seen them for 3 hours, so yeah, I'll be texting.
But at the office, spirits were high. While Peltola was on the floor waiting to vote, Chief of Staff Alex Ortiz spoke about some of the new hires.
We're really excited to have new folks here in the D.C. office. We have built out our policy team in particular.
Peltola has hired Elizabeth Othmer as legislative director. It's a key position. Othmer is from New Mexico. Ortiz says it's often hard to find Alaskans who love their state to relocate to Washington, D.C. But Ortiz says the non-Alaskan hires have valuable expertise in House policy and procedure.
I think Representative Peltola will benefit from that to be able to jump into the game really quickly in getting bills moving, passing legislation, to have them transition over to work for us. It's really huge.
And Ortiz notes Peltola still has staffers, like himself, who are Alaskans and worked for other members of the Alaska delegation. While the House is in limbo, the first day in the Senate went entirely to plan. Senator Lisa Murkowski took the oath of office for the fifth time. She was accompanied to the well of the Senate by her father, former governor and former senator Frank Murkowski, as well as Senator Dan Sullivan. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And Alaska's job market will continue on a path of recovery this year, though it's still a long way from where it was before the pandemic. That's according to the 2023 job forecast from the state's Department of Labor. Corinne Wiebold is an economist with the state and authored the report.
Pretty much every industry is forecasted to grow next year, but it is a lot of them are just returning to pre-pandemic levels. So this is just kind of a return to normalcy.
The state's job market dropped off a cliff in 2020 when the pandemic hit. Wiebold says that was less true for the Kenai Peninsula than other regions of the state, in part because the peninsula didn't see such big losses from canceled cruise ships.
In fact, the Kenai Fjords National Park had one of its best years ever in 2021, and that was propelled by local visitors as well as some independent non-cruise-based travelers.
That's a big contrast from Denali National Park, for example, which gets a majority of its visitors from cruise ships. Since those early pandemic days, the state has been gaining jobs across all regions, slowly. Some factors are limiting growth nationwide, like low labor force participation. But on a whole, Alaska's recovery is slower than other states. Wiebold says national challenges are compounded by factors like Alaska's reliance on tourism and oil.
Oil's really taken kind of a wild ride. And exactly why our oil jobs have been slower to recover than some of the other lower 48. It's a little bit hard to tell, but it might have something to do with our more remote locations, and it's just a little bit harder to get things going again.
And Alaska came into the pandemic in a weak economic position. You're listening to KTOO.